Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Zach Schrader. Now, Zach is a Minnesota native, but he is branching out west this year. He's going on his first Western big game hunt, and I'm excited to pick his brain about what he's been doing in preparation, how you could be doing the same things, things to think about that, you know, not everybody does. When you grow up maybe duck and deer hunting, and then all of a sudden you're traveling out west to giant country, you know, I didn't sit with binoculars in the tree stand. It's just not something that I did. And to think about the optics that you need, the gear, the footwear, all of that stuff, I hope is going to be beneficial to you guys. So we're going to dive into this episode with Zach. And I just got to say, it's amazing when I get to talk to people and hear their story start to finish. And I hope you guys enjoy that as well. When you hear them preparing for a hunt and then hopefully following up this episode will be a success story or a trial and error or learning experience that Zach and I talk about post-season. So I'm really pumped about this one. Let's jump in with Zach right now. You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
That part's 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today, I've got Zach Schrader. Zach, what is going on, man?
How's it going, Dan? Thanks for having me on here.
Dude, absolutely. I'm really excited about this one. We've been talking for a few minutes all about, you know, what your hunting story is and what you're planning on doing this fall. And this is going to be a great episode. I can already tell we've already been like laughing. I'm getting giddy, like just in excitement for hunting season. And so, it's going to be a good one. Before we jump into all that though, I want to give you a chance to share with the listeners a little bit about yourself. Maybe where you're from, how you got into hunting, things like that.
Okay. So I grew up Painesville, Minnesota, small town, like 2,500 people or so, where almost everybody hunts, I feel like. I mean, I've always grown up with it since I was probably like four is when like I became aware of hunting. Because me and my one of my closest buddies, the first time we ever met each other, because our parents were friends, I went to his house. And he had, it was like Big Game Hunter 2005 or something like that on his computer. And we played that thing for like 4 hours while our parents hung out. And that was like the beginning of hunting. And my dad has always been into it. And got my first bow when I was six. And the same day that I got it, so my birthday's in July, it was summer. There was a chipmunk over by our garden. And I asked my dad, I was like, hey dad, can I go shoot this thing? He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. I pulled back and I just domed this chipmunk at like, it was probably like 15 yards and somehow I hit it. And that was like the turning point where I was like holding it up so proud, you know, I got this chipmunk. I went over to my neighbor's house, Jerry and Karen. It was just an older couple. And I was like, look what I got. And she was, oh, congratulations. Here's a dollar. And then she gave me a dollar for every chipmunk I shot. So that whole summer, you know, I'm in the woods with my bow trying to shoot chipmunks, like just all day, every day out at the farm, at grandma and grandpa's farm. Didn't hit a single one after that. Then my next birthday, got a BB gun. And that's when it was just game over for the chipmunks and in our yard. So I'd shoot like one or two a day, bring them over to Jay and Karen's, get my payment. It was like a little business. Then I get $2 for a squirrel, $5 for a raccoon. And I shot like one raccoon, I think. So that's where it started. And then I always went on hunts, like duck hunts with my dad and my uncles up until I could shoot. So
man,
it's just been a lot of outdoors in my childhood.
Dude, the whole BB gun thing, I mean, if that's not the best introduction into hunting, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
Unlike you, I got in trouble for shooting animals with my BB gun. My parents were hunters, but I would shoot like songbirds and stuff, which big no-no, right? And my mom would get so mad and she'd be like, are you guys shooting the birds again? And we're like, no. And she's got like 100 bird feeders out in the back, you know, under every tree. And she'd like bring in a bird feeder and it would like the glass on it would be broken or there'd be BBs like stuck in the pine. And I'm like, yeah, there's not really any way of getting around this. Like we've obviously been shooting birds, but to get paid for it, man, I would have. I'd be filthy rich right now if I could get paid for every bird or chipmunk I shot when I was a kid. That sounds like an awesome business.
Yeah, the chipmunks ate their garden, so she was like, "You just shoot as many as you want." I was like, "All right, let me have at it." It was like 3 acres of woods we had, and I'd grid that thing like all day. So
that's amazing.
It's fun.
So that's how you got into it. What does hunting look like for you now? I mean, like, what are you most passionate about in the outdoor space?
I guess it's mainly duck hunting now, but once high school started, well, actually I should probably talk about before, because ages 11 through 13 were like my golden years of hunting. Before this would have been like middle school, I shot my first deer with a slug, because we're in a slug unit. So I shot a little button buck, super proud of that. And then the next spring, I shoot my first turkey with a shotgun. And then I was like, oh, Dad, this is so awesome. Like, I can't wait to go. And then my uncle let me hunt his land that next year. So I got an actual bow that I could shoot deer and stuff with. And that year I shot a nice 9-point. It scored like 126. And just with this, I mean, it was a crappy old bow. Like, I pulled it back on this deer right before dark, and the peep sight was like completely, you know, I couldn't see. And I had no idea that I could just like go like that with my nose and pump it. So I looked at the deer, I put my pin on it, and then I just put the peep over so it was dark, and I just probably punched the crap out of the trigger and ended up getting a liver shot on it. So he ran pretty far, but we found him the next day. And that was like the high point of my hunting career, I guess. Yeah. And then that next spring I shot a double beard turkey with my bow. So I was like,
dang, man, this is like the greatest middle school experience ever.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was like, we're in this ground blind, pull back on this turkey. That's right. We didn't know it was a double beard at this time. I'm aiming at its body, but I'm shooting through the mesh and my arrow hooks it and goes up and gets a headshot right on the turkey. So that was just pure luck. And then it happened to be a double beard. And so that was like, wow, I'm not going to get any better than this.
Yeah.
And then football started. And then that was like, it was a complete shift. Like, football just became my life for up until like 2 years ago. Cause I just wanted to play college ball, you know, go to the NFL, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I told everybody in high school that I would I'd major in football when I went to college. So played 2 years of college football, then decided like I could only hunt on Sundays, so duck hunt. And it kind of just like lost my passion for it, I guess, football. Cause in high school, you know, it's like small town, you're kind of the star, and I'm playing for like the hype, I guess.
Yeah.
Around it. So get to college, I'm not that guy. And then I started thinking like, why am I still playing it? And then I wasn't playing it for myself. I realized I was playing it for other people, like my family and the people in my hometown and like that. And then that's when I decided, I was like, you know, I just want to pursue hunting more, because that's like what I look for. I'd play the game and instantly I'd be like ready to hunt Saturday or Sunday. That was through high school too, but
yeah,
like me and my we'd get done with a football game, bomb out to my buddy's cabin, and it'd be like midnight because we just got home from an away game, sleep for 3 hours, and we'd wake up just like, oh yeah, you know, just stiffer than heck, and walk out there, shoot some ducks, come back, and then do it Sunday, and then have football on Monday.
Dang.
So once I quit football, it was my junior season, which was last year, and I wanted to do it again because COVID year was kind of weird. We didn't get to play, and I was like, ah, maybe once that we're back in it, I'll like find the passion for it again.
Yeah.
But after a couple of games, I was like, nah, I missed duck opener for the first time in like probably 13 years. And that just like, it just killed me. So I was sitting there and I'm like, all right, if we lose, oh my God, if we lose this game, I think that's going to be my sign that we quit. And we're down by 3 points, I think. There's like 5 seconds left in the game and we're on the 1 yard line or 2 yard line to win the game. And our quarterback throws a pick. So we lost.
Dang.
And like, I'm like, all right, I guess you want me to still play, you know, cause I'm thinking we're going to win this game. Like we'll run it in. And we ended up losing. And that was when I was like, okay, I'm going to pursue hunting now.
Yeah.
And this was like weeks. I'm sitting there trying to going back, you know, I'm religious too. So I'm talking to God, like, what do you want for me? Like to pursue. And that's when I stopped, bought my 2 week North Dakota tag right after that. Cause it was fall break. And then I probably hunted North Dakota for 10 out of those 14 days that you're able to hunt with my buddies who go to NDSU.
Nice. So,
yeah. And then ever since then, it's been a journey.
Man, that's sweet. I liked playing sports throughout high school, but I never like played for the teams, right? I would go and do the intramural stuff and play football and ultimate frisbee and basketball. And I mean, if it could be played, I love playing it. I've always been pretty athletic, but that is something that I just don't think I could do, is like give up hunting to play a sport, because I really do. I love to compete. I love to play sports, but I tell it's probably not a good thing to say in your interviews, but like one of the most recent official jobs that I've had, where I actually worked for a company, I started talking to the guy interviewing me, and I kind of had an in there already, so I knew I was going to get the job. So we were just kind of BSing about hunting, and I was like, oh yeah, man, I always tell people, like, if my job keeps me from being able to get out and hunt, like, I'm going to find a new job. And he just looked at me. He's like, that's about the most straightforward thing I've ever heard in an interview. And I was like,
you got the job though, right?
Yeah, I got the job, man. And luckily it was a really awesome company to work for. So like we hunted all the time. We would go out to one of the owner's properties and we'd like go out and duck hunt or dove hunt at lunch. We'd go bass fishing in the summer out at the ponds. I mean, they'd be like, oh yeah, man, go ahead, head out there. And we'd take like an hour and a half to 2 hour lunch break. And all of us, like 15 dudes, would be out there fishing and catching who knows what. So, yeah, that was cool. But to actually have an obligation that was like, nope, you basically can't hunt at all this season. I couldn't do that. For there's nothing in my life aside from family that I would completely give up hunting for like that. So.
I know that'd be tough. Now I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I mean, having just even like half of last season to only focus on school, but it didn't take up that much of my time. It was just like so eye-opening that I can actually hunt this much. Like I'm so used to just Saturday, Sunday, or even just Sunday. And now it's like I can go during the week. And it's one of my favorite ways to duck hunt that I don't think a lot of people do. I just take my kayak, throw it on top of my car. There's a river, just a small river right outside of Moorhead here. And I'll drop my kayak off here at point A, drive to point B, which is only like a mile or two away. And then I have to have another person do this with me so that we can like drop my car off and then bring me back to point A.
Yeah.
And then float down the river, shoot my limit of wood ducks. Like, there hasn't been a time I haven't shot my 3 wood ducks on this river.
What?
So it's like, I just float. It usually takes me like 2 or 3 hours to float. And then my car is already parked there at point B. Hop in the car, go back. And then I go to class at 3 o'clock or something. Like, I'll do this at like 11, 12, 1 midday when they're loafing there.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Dude, that's amazing. I've seen the videos. I see a lot of videos of guys cruising in canoes and kayaks down rivers like that, and they shoot geese. And yeah. There was one video I watched. They shot, I don't remember, I think there were 3 guys, and between the 3 of them, they shot like 11 banded geese. Like, all of these geese on this river were all banded. And I'm like, you got to go look it up on YouTube. It was insane. And I'm thinking, dude, I've got rivers right here in town that we do like a 2 or 3 hour float during the summer after work, whatever. And there's always geese there. We'll kick up a wood duck and it'll fly like 400 yards and then we'll catch up to it and it'll kick up again. And it's like, we just play leapfrog with this wood duck all the way down the river. And I'm like, why don't we ever try this? Like, we should actually bring the shotguns and hunt.
You should.
Yeah.
You should. It's super good.
I might have to start doing that. We always do like the boat thing. We get up super early. I mean, it's kind of a big event to go out and duck hunt, or like we try to make it a big event on the weekends where we all get together and we go hit the lake and we get our decoys set up. And I like that side of it, but it would also be pretty great to just go float for a couple hours and shoot. If I could shoot 3 Drake wood ducks right now, oh my gosh, I'd pay a lot of money to go and do that this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. It's so awesome because you'll like hug that little corner of the river and they'll sit under deadfall. So you just watch them and the drakes stick out like a sore thumb. So they're swimming on the water and you grab your gun and you get ready. And as soon as they get up, like, you just pick out your bird and it's 3 drakes almost every, unless you, a lot of times I've shot and then I've hit the drake and the hen just because they're pretty bundled.
Oh yeah.
It's like, you could easily pick out 3 drakes and half the time I limit out and then I'm like, okay. And then I just try to paddle to get back to my car as quick as I can because I'm usually crunched for time for school because
showing up to class covered in feathers and blood.
Yeah. Face paint all up. I did that one time. And it's like, I walked in the class and everyone's like, what the?
That's amazing. So you got into, well, you've been waterfowl hunting a bunch after college. After you got done playing football, did you pick up bow hunting again at that point?
Yep. So I got a bow from my uncle when I graduated from high school, and I probably shot it like 5 times before that, just to shoot it. And just cause I never had time. All I had time on the weekends was to duck hunt. Cause that was more of my passion. And then last fall, after I quit, Dan Staten, Elk Shape.
Yeah.
He did that little challenge in December, like shooting your bow this and this. So I did that and I ended up shooting my bow, every day of December. And it's freaking cold as hell up here. And just, like, it was so terrible some days. And then I was like, well, I might as well keep it up. Like, I've seen a lot of improvement in this last month. So I've shot my bow almost every day since last December.
Nice.
Which has been, it's just something I do, it's like something to get better at every day.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't feel like you did anything, as long as I shot my bow, I feel like I improved at something that's important in my life, which I like. And then I was like, well, I might as well try to get a North Dakota mule deer tag because I'm getting into bow hunting. So
that's this year. I mean, you're going on your first Western big game hunt.
Yep.
First one. Doing it with your bow. How did you go about picking out? Because this is really, I mean, a bulk of what we're going to talk about today is talking about your strategy, what your plan is for going after them, like not having done this before. And so how did you go about picking out the area that you wanted to hunt?
So the last 2 years, in the spring of my freshman year, so that would have been 2020, right when COVID hit. I was super into shed hunting whitetails for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years in the spring with my buddies. He's got, we always say he's got the game farm because his dad manages it really well. So we shed hunt that. And then I was talking to some guy at college. He was like, oh yeah, I go out to Medora, which is just the town way west North Dakota. He was like, I just shed hunt the Badlands out there. And I was like, oh, that'd be super cool. I'm like, you find anything? He's like, yeah. Show me these pictures of the mule deer sheds he found. And it just, I was like, oh, dude, that'd be so sweet. Just hold a big mule deer, you know, in my hand. So convinced two of my buddies to go out there with me. And we drove, it's only like a 5-hour drive from Fargo. Drove out there and we're on the valley, like, okay, what do we do now? And we're driving around. We just see like three does in the ditch. We're like, okay, there's deer here. Let's park. We parked. Walked around for probably hour and a half, 2 hours. Are you find anything? Nah. And then on our way back, I found the first antler of the trip because I glassed it up before and I was like, oh no, that just looks like a stick. So I got to it and it was a nice four point. And we were so excited, you know. And that was our strategy, was just to, if there was deer in the ditch, there was antlers in the area maybe. And yeah, we ended up finding, I think we found like 12 that trip. It was a 3-day trip. And every spring since then, now we've gone out there and kind of, we've went to a different spot every time to see what kind of deer are in which places. And there's one spot that I walked that I found four nice, it was a big 3 point and then three nice 4 points, all right sides. And we could not find the left sides to save our lives in this area. So I know there's at least four out there that I would shoot for sure. So we're going to go to that spot this fall, me and my dad.
Nice.
And that's going to be his first Western hunt too, ever, which it's going to be exciting. But that was the main thing. It's like, I don't have time to scout in the summer just because it's a 5-hour drive out there and gas is like $4 a gallon right now, so I don't really want to. But that's kind of the plan. We have like 3 or 4 spots marked that we're gonna go, and talking to some other guys, they say try to spot them early in the morning and then watch them bed and then make your stock on them.
Yeah,
once they're bedded. So that's gonna be the strategy we're gonna use, because navigating those badlands is pretty difficult. Like if they're on the move, they're just going to go, whoop, whoop, you know?
Well, and the terrain changes. It's amazing how quickly an animal can disappear, even in spots that look fairly flat. And then once you throw a topography in there, you'll be like, oh, I can see that entire hillside or that mountain over there. And then animals just appear. It's like they just pop up out of nowhere. And you're like, I've been looking at this for the last hour. Where did that come from? You know? Yeah. And so that's going to be really cool and interesting, because I haven't done the archery thing yet. And so, I mean, you know, if I get to like 600-700 yards, I feel pretty good on an animal. I can't imagine having to be inside of 50-60 yards, you know, or whatever you're comfortable shooting. It's also interesting to me watching guys like here in the Midwest, right? Excuse me. Where they're like, even for me on a whitetail, I'll shoot like 40 yards with my bow on a whitetail. And after that, I'm like, you know, I don't think I'll take a poke unless it's a follow-up shot. You know, if I shoot one at 20 and it runs off to 50, you better believe I'm going to try to stick another one in it if it gives me an opportunity. But out there, I hear people, they're like, oh yeah, man, I shot my antelope at like 73 yards last year. And I'm like, an antelope? What? You mean something the size of a golden retriever? Like, you shot that at 73 yards with your bow? That's a freakish feat in my mind. Yeah. How do you do that? And then you hear of people all the time, they're like, mm-hmm. My effective range with my bow, you know, like on an elk is probably like 80-90 yards. And I'm like,
you're
crazy. But also it makes sense to have that in your arsenal to be able to shoot that far and accurate. And obviously the vitals on an elk are like the size of the entire torso of a whitetail. But to be able to do that, then you don't have to close that last 50-60 yards. And that could be the difference between coming home with meat and not. Yeah. So,
and that could be the hardest part too, is getting within that 40 to 50 yards.
Yeah.
So I want to get a movable sight right now. I have the locked 5-pin, so I'm effective up to 60, but I don't know if I'd take a shot at 60 just because in my backyard. So we have a little college house here in Moorhead. The farthest I can shoot is 50, and I'm like right on the edge of the road. So I'd have to go to the neighbors across the street and shoot across the road, which is probably illegal. So I don't get much shots at 60.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I feel like 50 is a great range, and you know, you've got a lot of energy. You'll get a lot of penetration at that distance. And I mean, 50 yards, it's not going to be easy to get that close to an animal, but it's definitely doable. I love watching the spot and stalk videos. You know, we've done it, but it's definitely not, like I said, that final closing the distance. We've done the spot and stalk where we see it at like 1500 yards, and then we get down to 300 yards, and then we shoot an animal, which is still a lot of fun. But to put that last bit of effort into it, or to play the wind and the topography just right, where it's like, dude, you might not see the animal again from 120 yards out until you're like 15 yards. It's bedded. You're about to pop up over this knob and like have to draw and shoot quickly. Oh my gosh. I'm getting so amped up, like really excited for you about this. This is going to be amazing. So aside from practicing with your bow, and then I know you said you had talked to several people about it. What other information are you taking in to prepare or to figure out what kind of strategy you want to implement this fall?
The strategy when I'm out there, I don't really have one yet. Actually, I probably won't even have one, but I'm doing like I'm doing the Cameron Haynes thing before we start.
Yeah.
And I'm going to run every day before lift. And I started this a couple of days ago, and I'm going to be doing that just to be in shape. Cause when we're out there shed hunting, it's like, we get pretty gassed, you know, walking up those little knobs and all that out there. So I just want to be, the thing I'm going to do is just to be in the best shape possible for it.
Yeah.
Cause I know I'm confident with my bow. It's just, I want to be able to, I don't know if like, if I'm mentally able to like, you know, keep going all day for 4 or 5 days, you know, just cause I've never done it.
Yeah.
And I know some guys do like those 10-14 day backcountry hunts. Like that's just crazy. I'm getting nervous for like a 4 day hunt where we're going to probably be in the car most of the time, you know, and then putting stocks on from there or a couple miles out maybe. So I'm just trying to be in the best shape possible for it. And hopefully my dad can keep up. He's 52. So.
Guys, I can't believe it, but we are 1 month away from season openers all across the country. And if you're like me, you're finalizing your gear list, getting last minute preparations set in place, and a few things that you cannot forget are a good rangefinder and a good set of binoculars. Or, best of both worlds, the two combined into one. Vortex offers their line of Fury binoculars with rangefinding capabilities and applied ballistics built right in. I'll have mine around my neck from the mountains of Utah to the Northwoods of Wisconsin and every trip in between. So if you're ready to get serious about your last minute prep to increase your odds this fall, check out what's new from Vortex at vortexoptics.com and head to your favorite Vortex dealer to make sure you're ready for everything fall can throw at you. Yeah, that... I mean, the adrenaline side of it definitely carries you a certain distance when you when you see that animal. And I mean, I just know this from my few hunts that I've done out west or even here, like turkey hunting. One of the hardest hunts I've ever done was a turkey hunt here in Missouri. Like I literally crawled on my hands and knees for like 300 yards trying to get to this turkey. And I'm like, the initial excitement of like, all right, I'm going after this bird. That got me like 50 yards. And then for the next 250, I'm like, is this going to happen? I am pouring sweat. I'm covered in mud because it had just rained and I'm crawling. And that's where you're going to really test yourself physically and mentally, mm-hmm. is that final little bit where maybe you do lose sight of the animal and you're like, I don't even know if it's still there, but I'm going to act like it is. And it might take me an hour to get into position of where I think it is, but it might be just gone, or I might, mm-hmm. I might miscalculate where it is. And then I bump it and then I just blew the hunt, but it's still exciting. Each encounter is going to be pretty amazing. I feel like
that's what I'm excited for, is I just want to see what I can, cause you know, I'm used to football like that. That was like pushing my limits kind of, and getting me out of my comfort zone. I'm excited for this to be like the competition against myself, is this Western hunt, this first one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have you set an expectation for what you're hoping to shoot or what you're willing to shoot?
It's, I don't know. Cause once I get out there, I don't know if I just see like a small buck, if I'll get super amped, you know, and just want to take it. But I've been like back and forth on that, you know, cause I want to, obviously you want to get a decent size one, cause I've seen the deer out there that I could be able to shoot.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn. So I don't know. I'm not going to shoot like a little spike or anything like that. I do want to get something that would at least like look respectable as a European mount, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it's a little 3x3, but that's probably going to be my thing. First day, maybe not shoot a little 3x3 or a 2x2, you know? But
yeah,
who knows?
My buddy Sean, who got me into Western big game hunting, he always told me, just break the seal. He's like, break the seal. You know, like if you have an opportunity, like don't worry as much about the rack size. And I mean, yep. I still had my expectations going out to Colorado. I was like, man, I don't want to shoot like a spike, or I don't want to shoot like just some raghorn 3x3. And mm-hmm. now, don't get me wrong, at the end of the season, if it was last day, I would shoot whatever is legal. And yeah. there's a lot of people who, you know, say, don't shoot something on the last day that you wouldn't, or don't pass something on the first day that you'd shoot on the last day. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's called like evolving as a hunter. Like yeah. as you do this, if you're out west, if this isn't like a managed property, right? I'm not talking like whitetail. You're sitting in the tree stand opening day and a decent buck comes through, but you're really after a different one. Like, yeah, your expectations, your desire to shoot a certain class deer can change throughout the year. But out west, I mean, it's going to be,
I feel like one chance.
Every day it's going to change for you, you know?
Yeah.
After maybe 2 days of no shot opportunities, you're going to start doubting and thinking like, dude, if I get that close to anything, it's going to die. And just feel, I mean, I would say just don't put too high of expectations on yourself, but also, you want to shoot something that you're happy with, you yeah. know, you don't want to, mm-hmm. I don't at least ever want to regret taking the life of an animal and being like, I'm not yeah. proud of that. But also the meat is just as important to me as the rack is.
Yep.
When you compare yeah, those two and get a lot of meat and an awesome rack, it's even better. So,
yep. And the thing that, so it's only like a 5-hour drive from Fargo. So I know if I don't get one, this first kind of longer trip, I think we're going 4 days, so 5 days, but 4 full days of hunting. I know if I don't get one there, I have October and November to drive out there for like a weekend or something.
Yeah.
It'd be probably be by myself then, or with a buddy. And so then I'm like, oh man, if I don't get one that first time, I still have a couple chances to go again.
Yeah.
Where it's not just like a 15-hour drive, you know, and that's my hunt. So struggling with that a little bit too. I don't know. Cause I would be proud of myself just to put a stock on an animal and, you know, be successful. Like,
yeah.
Just cause it'd be my first one ever. So I don't know.
Well, and I think that's where my buddy Sean telling me that, he's like, the confidence that you have knowing that you can do it. Like mm-hmm. you can worry about size in the years to come. You can, yeah. you can worry about shooting a big 6x6 or something with back scratchers, you know? And he's like, but if you get that first one out of the way, you already in your mind are like, hey, I've already done this. Like, this isn't as hard as what I was thinking initially. like I can do it again. And you're going to go into it with a mindset of like, yeah, it's going to take a lot of work. It's not going to be easy, but I can do it. Whereas every year you go without shooting one, you're almost teaching yourself defeat and like, hey, this is way too hard. Like, I'm not going to be able to do this. And so I was like, that's really interesting. Luckily, I mean, the first elk that I actually had an opportunity at, I was happy taking either way. And I would still shoot that elk this year. And then the next year it was the same thing, but yeah, to be able to go and do it is a feat in and of itself. And so that's going to be exciting, man. I can't wait to hear some more stories. We're going to have to do a follow-up podcast afterwards just to hear how everything went.
Hopefully it's good news after.
Yeah. If you do get one this year, I mean, is this a spot you plan on going back to year after year, do you think?
Yeah, I know I'll probably go back and shed hunt it just because it's like that middle where it's not insane Western, you know, it's kind of like mini Western. I feel like, I mean, it's manageable where the valleys and the peaks aren't, they're really not that big, you know, compared to like Montana or Idaho or Wyoming.
Yeah.
And I found one elk shed out there. So it's like, I've got that bugs or that itch scratched already from North Dakota. So it's like, I've got a lot of love for it. So I think I'll go back to, and it's a cheap tag. So like anyone doesn't know, it's $250 to, you know, go hunt mule deer. And then you're guaranteed a whitetail archery tag out there. It's just the all deer tag, which is mule deer and whitetail optional. That's the lottery.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dude, I feel like that'd be a great hunt. And I never really thought about that, having almost an introduction state to Western hunting. You go to do something that's more physical than what you're used to, maybe say in Tennessee, but it's less physical than if you're going and hiking the mountains of Idaho. Yeah. And so to put yourself in a more physical environment where it's going to require so much more of you, you're going to test yourself mentally, but maybe you're not jumping in the deep end, you know, you're just hanging out in the kiddie pool while you learn to doggy paddle, and then maybe years to come you go and do a harder thing. I guess I never really put that together, that there's places like that where you can get kind of the feel of Western hunting but not the full experience just yet.
And even South Dakota is kind of like that. I know a lot of people do focus more on South Dakota, but I looked at the draws and it was way easier for me to draw a North Dakota one. So that's why I went there. And it's not like backcountry out there. Most of the times when you're on top of these little buttes, it's like you have cell reception and all that comfort, you know, you're not too far away from civilization, I guess, even though North Dakota has like no people, so you're pretty far away
from a lot of people. No matter where you are in North Dakota, you're away from civilization.
Yeah. So I mean, I got two flat tires out there this spring and we survived, so it's not terrible backcountry.
What have you done different gear wise? You know, I mean, obviously going from duck hunting and whitetail hunting, there's a change of things that you're going to need, or like a lot of people don't put in Wisconsin. When I grew up hunting there, we put a really high value on thick insulated boots. You didn't have to be able to hike all day in them. You know, you just had to get to your tree stand or to the blind or to the bucket that you're going to sit on. And that's it. And then they had to keep your feet warm while you're sitting there in, you know, 2-degree weather all season long. But obviously hiking around, putting stalks on animals, you're not going to be wearing those 1600 gram insulated Rockies. What other gear have you had to adjust or purchase in order to get ready for this hunt?
Starting with shed hunting out there, I had to get my first like good pair of boots. So I got some crispy West River 2s, pretty sure. Got those for shed hunting because the season before that, I had these old, you know, Rocky boots, but they weren't the insulated ones. They were just like normal hunting boots. It just shredded them. Like there was holes all in my boots like the second day, and those boots were trashed after one shed hunting trip. So I got a decent pair of boots for that, and they're holding up super well. I love them. And clothing wise, I'm keeping the, so I have a lot of Sitka gear. So yeah. I am keeping all my base layers from duck hunting, just like the wicking stuff, the lightweight hoodie and all that stuff. So I'll wear that even though it's not technically the right camo, you know, but got some, I think I'm good for clothing. You know, got just a cheap pair of rain gear if it actually does end up raining out there, which it hardly ever does. And I'm on the fence of if I need a spotting scope or not. I can't get myself to buy it. When we were out there, a lot of the deer that I've spotted, I spotted them pretty well, just binos.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you're not looking extremely far distances out there. So I don't think I'm going to get that. And then, like pack wise, I got a new pack, but it's kind of like a day pack. So I don't know if that's going to, I know I could fit a quarter in there from a deer, maybe two, but it's not a meat hauler. So my dad's got one of those, thank goodness. So I don't have a meat hauling backpack yet. I'm going to see how this, the Apex pack from Sitka, I'm going to see how that works for this, but gear wise, I might be a little underprepared just because I'm college and I'm broke as shit.
But I mean, if you've got boots, you've got binos, like those are two major things when it comes to Western hunting. And I'd tell people that whether they're archery or rifle hunting, the pack I would say is probably next in line because you already have the clothing. If your dad has a meat hauler and if you had one, you guys could essentially get that whole deer out in one trip pretty easily. Whereas if you don't, if you just have a small day pack, you know, you might have to make a second trip in there for it. And that's just part of it. The spotting scope though, I figured like the Dakotas, you'd probably need one for super long range. But if you said like you're spotting a lot of these deer fairly close, as long as you have good clear binos, do you have a tripod for your binos at all?
Nope.
Dude, I would highly recommend that. I listened to a meat eater episode years ago and I was like, interesting. Yeah, it makes sense. Like when you're just holding your binos, it's kind of shaky, it's kind of wobbly. Yeah. Well, I don't remember what Vortex spotter it was. It was like the Summit. It was a real lightweight one, collapsed down pretty small. I mean, to where it could fit in most pockets that a water bottle could fit in. And so I bought that. And my first time sitting down behind that, hooking up my binos to the tripod and just looking through it, I'm like, I feel like it went from 480p to HD that fast because I wasn't moving at all. So like I could legitimately see songbirds flying around at like 700 yards. And I was like, this is a game changer, man. I wish I would have known about this earlier. So now my tripod goes with me everywhere. And for anything, I mean, really, unless you're trying to accurately judge an animal or get really clean video of it, you don't really need a spotter for anything that's going to be within sight like that. But what you could do also is get like the phone scope attachment.
Yep.
I got that for my binos and I got it for my spotter. And so now I can hook my phone up to it super easily, like clip it in, and then I can get that extra magnification just on my phone by like, you know, spreading my fingers on it. And so instead of having to get like a 60 or an 80 power spotting scope, I can use my 10x42 binos and then I can get an extra 3x magnification. So now I'm actually up to like 30 and I can get a decent look at animals even with that. So something to think about, you know, it's going to be a lot cheaper than a spotting scope.
No kidding. Well, then you have to buy a tripod for the spotting scope anyways. So it's, that's an extra expense on there.
Well, like I've got a lot of tripods now, but I can interchange my spotter and my binos through them pretty easily. Yeah. I will say I'm so happy. I got the Razor HD spotter from Vortex, and it is unbelievable. Like, it actually breaks apart. It breaks in half so that you can like stuff it into a smaller pocket instead of having this super long one. I haven't used it out west yet, but I've been going out to my main hunting property here and spotting whitetails, like just trying to do some observations and see what bucks are back.
Yeah.
And it's one of my new favorite things to just go and hang out at the edge of the bean field and get video of these bucks through my spotter. Yeah. I don't know. I could do that every night of the week.
That's cool. Maybe next year I'll get on that.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. I mean, I've seen so many people talk about how important spotters are just for every aspect of hunting. So
yeah, I mean, they definitely change things up a lot. Once you get into that, like, hey, this is exactly the type of animal I want to shoot, you can save yourself from walking a half a mile.
Yeah.
You know, just by getting that extra magnification, that clarity. And so it's like all of a sudden you see this buck, you may be able to see it with your binos, but you can't tell what it is. And so you're like, hey, let's close the distance another 700 yards to get a better look to see if we even want to go after it. Well, with the spotter, you can do that from the same spot that you're already at. Yeah. And so it helps, but definitely for your first hunt, I would say, see how it goes. You might get out there and be like, dude, I don't think I ever need to buy a spotter.
Till I go out to Idaho or Montana.
There's just something about it. And the nice thing about all of this gear is you can coordinate with the other people you hunt with so that, you know, you're not all carrying a backcountry stove or like a jet boiler or a pocket rocket or anything like that. You don't all have to have a spotting scope. You don't all have to have a cook set. You don't all have to have a tent. You know, if you have one guy with a lightweight two-man tent or a tarp, you can really coordinate so that everyone's not going in super heavy and you have one of everything instead of five of everything.
I never thought of that either. But I gotta get my buddy, he's got a spotting scope, I gotta get him to come out there with me.
Or just borrow it, man. 4 days. Dude, he can live without that thing for 4 days.
I can convince him.
It's definitely helpful. Like, even on the road, man, it's a lot of fun. Get like a window mount. You can get the window mount that goes right on top so you can actually spot from inside the car, and you know, you kill the engine so you don't get the vibration of it, and you can sit there in glass or video stuff. But dude, once you're putting that stock on, man, this is one piece of advice that I will tell you that I tell a lot of people that I talk to, probably everybody that are going out on their first hunt. Have your pack with you, like always, because you're going to get to a point where you're like, man, I'm going to be right back past this. I'm going to set my pack down, like, so that I don't have to worry about it. And if you've got a buddy right there, that's different. But if you set it down like mid stock, you could chase that animal for another 900 yards. And then you're like, crap, where did I put my backpack? Or you get it down and then you're like, dude, I don't have any of my knives or game bags or literally anything to take care of this animal. Now I have to go back, find my pack, come back, retrieve the animal. And it is easy, man. I've done it multiple times, even with that mindset, like, don't leave your pack anywhere. I'll just set it down. And then all of a sudden in the moment, it's like, oh crap, dude, there's an animal. I got to get closer. And then 30 minutes later, I realize I don't even have my pack. Like, all I have is my rifle, and hopefully I can get back and find it. So
yeah, and it's like 1,000 yards away.
Dude, it's easy, man. There's so much stuff, and like, you're gonna learn a ton. And each year you're gonna learn even more and more. And I'm excited to hear how it goes.
Yeah, it's like every single year, no matter how good you think you are, it's like you're gonna be a student your whole life of the outdoors, because so much can, you know, change year to year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So is it just you and your dad that are doing this?
It's gonna be just me and my dad the first time. And then there's a buddy from Concordia where I go to school. He's from Germany and he's really good with camera and he wants to get into hunting. So I was like, hey, if you want to come out here and, you know, do some film stuff for me while we're out here and you can kind of learn the ropes of this Western hunting, like, he wants to do that. So that'll be cool. And then getting him into duck hunting too. So
nice.
Thank goodness get some good footage, hopefully.
Man, that, yeah, imagine a couple months from now. You, well, actually, when does your hunt start?
September 15th.
Dang.
I think.
So yeah, you're soon. A month and a half away.
Yeah, and we were planning on going September 1st because they opened really early, so I could get a velvet mule deer if we did go early, but we're going to be going early goose hunting actually, so that weekend, so we bumped it back to the third weekend of September.
Nice. When you guys go out, what are you doing as far as sleeping arrangements go? Are you doing a tent or just hanging out in the truck? Are you guys going to be like camping near the truck, or are you guys going to go out and do spike camp?
Well, there's like three different little campsites out there that you can just park at. So I think we'll go out there and then just drive the spots, maybe like a 5-10 minute drive from this campground, maybe 15 minute drive. Yeah. So we'll set up a tent there and yeah. It's going to be a little more comfortable than I think it is, because it's like, we're really not like, you know, bombing out into the Badlands and setting up camp in a random spot, building the fire. Like, we're going to just go back to the campsite.
Doing day hunts.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because the plots of land aren't really big enough, I don't think, to do that. I mean, there's some spots where they are, but where we are, there's a lot of ranches in between. So it's like, you can walk a good ways, but then you gotta, like, you can't just like keep bombing in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually you're going to run into the border, and it's not like, it's not going to take you 5 days to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of cool though. I feel like that will work in your favor. To have, you know, smaller chunks that you can break apart, because it can be very intimidating when you go out to these places that are literally a million acre unit, and you're like, I can literally hunt anywhere and there's not a house in sight. It's like, where do I go? But it, since you're going to be kind of isolated and find that, hey, I have to stick within, you know, this half mile or, you know, even 40,000 acres, like staying within that, it's not, hey, what's that like way over there 5 miles away on the horizon? Like, maybe we should go check that area out. You know, you can kind of hone in a lot quicker. Is this chunk of public a good spot? Are there deer here? Have we seen anything? If not, let's bump over to a new one and come back later on.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice in North Dakota. If land isn't posted out there, it's open to the hunters.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, you still like ask the owner, but just out of courtesy. But technically, if it's not posted anywhere, you can, like, it's open to hunting, and you can corner cross on the public lands in there in North Dakota.
Oh, sweet.
So that opens
North
up
Dakota
a lot,
sounds
so.
Awesome.
I know. Yeah. Besides it, you know, being North Dakota, it's just super good for hunting.
Do you know, I guess I've never really looked into the mule deer rut. Is when does the rut hit in North Dakota for muleys?
I think that's late. I think it's in November.
Oh, okay.
I think it's during rifle season, actually.
Okay.
Which kind of stinks, but we get a ton of opportunity before the rifle season starts.
Well, and it might be great, because like the big mature bucks that everybody wants to go after, you know, they might not be surrounded by a bunch of does. And so you might only be putting a stock on one good mule deer instead of walking into like 12 sets of eyes and ears and noses. And it might work to your advantage early season to be able to go and do that. And I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming mule deer bucks also have their like bachelor groups that they hang out in, probably leading up to the rut. So you might run into a little bit of that, but at least then you can see like the bachelor groups. That's my favorite thing. The fact that like bucks all year until it's time to breed, just hang out with the other dudes. Like, I'm like, that is so, I find it very comical. And when you get out there and you can see that, then you can actually compare and say, hey, this is really the average class. Like if I want to go for a 3x3 or a 4x4 or bigger, like I'm seeing a lot of small deer, but there's plenty that are that size. I think I could still make it happen on a big one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
That's super exciting, man. I can't wait, like I said, to hear how it all pans out for you. And I definitely want to get out and do an archery hunt out west soon. And so
yeah.
I might just live vicariously through you this year. And I'll keep you updated too, because I'll be about that same time. I'll be in Utah helping my friend Linnea on an archery hunt. And so
elk or mule deer?
Mule deer. Nice. So yeah, same deal. Totally different terrain, probably. But we'll keep in touch and see how that goes. Before we hop off the call, I do want to give you a chance to share with everybody where they can find you, how they can follow along and keep up with how your hunt's going.
Okay. I'm super active on Instagram. So it's just Zach, Z-A-C-H, S, and then Schrader, because Zach Schrader was taken. So I just add an extra S in front of that.
Nice.
Yeah. I tried being active on TikTok for a little bit, but then a bunch of my, like, they kind of just banned a lot of the stuff, you know, if there's a dead animal or a mount or, so I kind of stopped with TikTok. I know you're super active on it, right?
I definitely have to navigate the guidelines, the community guidelines and restrictions. Yeah. I posted a video, and I don't know if I've said this on this podcast, but there's a guy named famous fisherman. His name is Dan. He's from Florida and he posts all the time. He's always on live out fishing in his kayak. Well, he did this duet of a guy who is like playing a comb on his teeth, like making a sound with it. And so then Dan, the music like behind it, he had his fishing pole and he was like playing the bass with his fishing pole.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, sweet. And there were chimes in it. So I grabbed two rifle shells and I start clinking them together, like to the beat. And so we're all playing like these unconventional instruments and pretending that we're making the music. And they kicked me off for that because I had empty rifle casings.
Yeah.
And I was clanging them together and I'm like, all right, this is getting obnoxious. And so I navigate it pretty well now. I just don't have any weapons or dead animals in it. And it's still fun content to make, but it's unfortunate that we have to do that.
Yeah, it is. So I've stick to Instagram, but it is fun making those little like comedy skits on reels. I love it.
Oh yeah.
So I do a lot of those and then try to share my hunts and what I'm doing outdoors and just, my life.
Nice. Well, yeah, hopefully people will go and check that out. I'll be following along for sure. And like I said, we'll hop back on. I want to hear how it goes.
Yeah.
And maybe we can even get an update in between seasons if you don't tag out on that first week.
All right. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. And that is going to wrap it up for today's show. I really enjoyed that. And I've got to tell you guys something. I feel so blessed and so honored to be able to do this. Like the fact that I can hang out and talk with fellow hunters and outdoorsmen and women all across the country, that people want to take time out of their day to listen to the podcast or to join me as a guest. The interactions that I have on social media and online with people from all around the world, really, about their history. Like, I get pictures from people all the time. They're like, hey, check this out. And that interaction is awesome. I've really enjoyed building these relationships with all of you guys. And so feel free, if you're someone who's been listening to this for a long time, reach out and maybe we can get you on the podcast. I just like connecting with other people. And so thank you guys for the support. Thank you guys for listening and taking the time out of your day for this to be a part of your life. And I guess that's enough of that. We got lots coming up. I will be this time next week in Utah on an archery hunt. I will have a new duck dog, which I'm really excited about. Well, a new future duck dog, if that makes sense. I'm getting a puppy. It will not be trained yet, but lots of changes going on in my life. And we're going to hit the road here in like an hour. So thanks for listening. And until next time, get out there and chase new adventure.